Well, good afternoon, Juneau. It's a few seconds before 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. It's time for Juneau Afternoon. Pat Moore, your host today, and I'll be talking with Joanne Gardenberg and Rabbi Dove Gardenberg. These folks are running a NAMI Juneau support group for folks with mental families with serving someone with mental illness. The Home Skillet Music Festival from Sitka will come online to tell us about the festival down there. And folks from the Alaska State Museum will be in to tell us about a walkthrough of their World War II exhibits. The flood advisory for Juneau has been canceled, and the weather for the rest of the day is a chance of rain with highs around 61, light winds tonight, cloudy, chance of rain, lows around 49, southeast winds 5 miles per hour.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Navajo Nation Council rejects a water rights settlement. The council voted down legislation Thursday, which would have approved the Navajo Hopi Little Colorado River Water Settlement. Navajo and Hopi tribes needed to approve the settlement for legislation to move forward in Congress. Arizona senators introduced legislation to settle tribal claims to water from the Little Colorado River. Under the settlement, the tribes would waive their claims to the Little Colorado River in exchange for water delivery projects. Navajo Nation President Ben Shelley supported the settlement, saying it would bring running water to thousands of Navajo homes. Shelley expressed his disappointment with the council on Thursday. There has been much debate and opposition over the settlement on the Navajo reservation. Critics say the settlement is an attack on their sovereign rights. A recent ruling by the Oklahoma Supreme Court could end up costing Native American businesses in the state more money. KGOU's Kirk Courtney reports.
The case started when a security guard working for the Osage Nation slipped and fell on the ice, injuring his shoulder. He filed a workers' compensation claim with the state of Oklahoma, but the Osage Nation said the state did not have jurisdiction in the case because of its status as a sovereign, federally recognized tribe. The Oklahoma Supreme Court ruled that because the tribe did not have its own laws or courts for handling workers' compensation cases, the tribe's insurance company did fall under state jurisdiction. Now tribes could face higher prices for their insurance if they have to go through what's typically the more expensive Oklahoma workers' compensation court system. Safety and risk manager for the Osage Nation, Ed Moulton, says he wants the tribe to pass its own workers' comp laws so it can handle its own cases. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
Parts of the Northern Plains are getting ready for relief from a very hot week. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
South Dakota has 9 reservations, and they've all been hot this week. Highs have reached the 90s and lower triple digits for most of the week, as high pressure has stalled over the region. Flandreau Santee Sioux and Yankton Sioux tribal lands are under a heat advisory for today, but Billy Williams with the National Weather Service in Sioux Falls says a cool down is coming.
The cool air starts seeping in. It won't come roaring in. It'll start seeping in steadily later on tonight and tomorrow. Be quite a bit different with generally dry weather. There might be a few early morning storms south of Interstate 90.
The Pine Ridge and Rosebud reservations on South Dakota's southern border have a slight chance of thunderstorms over the next several days, which would provide relief from a very dry summer. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
New figures show that compared to tribal gaming, horse and sports wagering in Wyoming is on the decline. Wyoming Public Radio's Tristan Autone has more.
According to Casino City's North American Gaming Almanac, horse and sports betting has slumped. Because Wyoming does not have a state lottery, bingo, or other forms of gaming, the almanac tracked the only forms of gaming in the state, excluding tribal casinos. Vin Narayanan is the managing editor for the report.
Between 2008 and 2009, there was a 40% increase. It jumped from 1.89 million to 2.65 million. But from 2009 to 2010, it dropped from 2.65 million to 2.26 million. So that's about a 14.5% drop. And that's pretty consistent with your traditional drop in horse racing throughout the country.
Narayanan says the drop in horse race enthusiasts stems from a combination of recession and an industry that has failed to attract younger generations while their traditional older patrons begin to dwindle in numbers. However, according to the Indian Gaming Industry report released earlier this year, tribal gaming in the state increased 1% during that same time period, while nationally growth rates of tribal casinos tracked at about 10%. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
On this day in 2010, the film The Only Good Indian was screened in Manhattan, Kansas. The film originally premiered at the 2009 Sundance Film Festival. Set in Kansas in the early 1900s, a Native American boy is taken away from his family and forced to attend boarding school. The boy escapes, and a bounty hunter is sent to track him down and return him to school. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're in tune with KTOO News. It's 5 minutes and 30 seconds after the hour of 3 o'clock. Pat Moore hosting today for Juno Afternoon. My first two guests have been, at least the rabbi has been on the show a couple of times so far, and I think this may be the first time I've had a chance to talk on the radio with Joanne Gartenberg. But Joanne Gartenberg is a doctor at Bartlett Hospital who specializes in psychology, and Dov Gartenberg is the rabbi of the Jewish congregation here in Juno. But the two of them are not really here to talk about the Jewish congregation this time. It's more about a support group that's run by NAMI for families and friends of persons who suffer mental illness. So how did this support group come into being?
Well, the support group actually has been in existence, as far as we know, for several years, started by NAMI. And we joined the support group as participants earlier this year when we had a family member who was having a mental health crisis, and we realized we could use some support in dealing with that. We found the group very helpful and established good connections with folks in the group. And then once our crisis had passed and we were feeling a little bit more together, we were asked if we would consider co-leading the group. And we decided it would be a very good thing for us to do together, a good way to give back to the community. And that's how our involvement as leaders got started.
Give back to the community. You've only been here a very short period of time. You haven't racked up a major debt.
What's it called? Pay it forward.
I think that it must be pay it forward. So, how does the combination of spiritual guidance and psychological guidance? How do you work that into the way that you deal with the group?
Well, my contribution is to bring to people a tradition within Judaism that talks about character development. And it's a wonderful tradition that also is very relational. It really helps us to how we relate to other people and how we can refine morally, spiritually, our relations with others. And this is particularly true, I think, in families where there's a loved one with mental illness, where relationships become so impacted by crisis and change. So we included what we call virtues, really exploring different virtues that bear on situations like these and how we can strengthen ourselves. And it also ties into the mindfulness, which Joanne will talk about, which is how to develop mindfulness and stress reduction techniques for those who are primary caretakers for loved ones with mental illness.
I definitely want to talk about that, but you said strengthen ourselves. When a family is dealing with someone in crisis, the person is usually receiving a great deal of care and attention because of the nature of the crisis, but the family is often left out. Is that the function of this group, is to provide that kind of background?
I'd say that is the main function, to provide support for family members. I would say, though, sometimes the family, that the patient, if you will, that they're dealing with has not yet gotten into treatment or is rejecting treatment. And while sometimes it is the case that yet they have a good support network and things are going according in the way we'd like them to go. Again, sometimes they're resistant to treatment, the treatment's not working. And so really family members come with experience all over the spectrum. And this is a way both for us to provide support for them, but also for them to get support from and learn from each other in terms of how to cope with these difficulties.
The rabbi used the term mindfulness. Could you expand on that a little?
Yeah, in my work as a psychiatrist and a therapist here at Bartlett and when I was in practice previously, I think my approach is to try to help people be, if you will, in the moment to deal with what's going on. I believe that much of our distress is caused from wishing things were different than they are, and a lot of this work is to help people accept things as they are and to accept themselves as they are at the moment, but also to develop their character, develop strength, develop attributes that do help them cope with what's going on.
I think when I was reading about your programs that the word meditation came up in the discussion. So do you use a meditation process?
We do. We haven't taught formal meditation techniques in this support group, although we actually do begin each session with a period of settling in, which can involve sometimes a guided meditation or just focusing on the breath as a way to transition from being out in the real world to being in this group and paying attention to what's going on right there, right now. I do teach meditation in a more formal way with Dr. Elaine Schroeder in our mindfulness-based stress reduction program through Bartlett that we taught this spring and will also offer again this fall.
We discussed that at one point on the air. It sounded like a very interesting program. That will be repeated, as I understand?
It will be. We're starting another program in the middle of September that will go for 8 weeks.
Okay, but the program we're talking about now is actually a fixed-length program. It's designed for people to come into and go for a ways and like that. Is that correct?
Well, it is, but people will continue. We made it with a focused number of sessions with the idea that people would make a commitment to come to as many of the sessions as they could, as opposed to having a kind of drop-in, drop-out. And this gives us greater continuity, gives the people more of a sense of a trust, I think, and safety within the group. But the people that completed our 8-week session this past spring, we hope will join us when we have our next 4-week session coming up next week. And then as we go on into the fall, we'll offer another session. And again, this gives a way for people to give back to others and offer them more support as they're farther along in their journey, and we have people coming in who are just starting to deal with these kinds of issues.
So the sessions that you're starting now start on July 12th.
That's correct.
And
right.
When? What time of day are these?
The 7 o'clock uh-huh. in the evening.
And then how long?
They're at Congregation Sukkah Shalom in West Juneau. That's the location. And they're an hour and a half, more or less.
Okay. And can you give us an idea of what, we've already talked about the fact that you may start with some kind of meditative process. What can people expect if they decide to commit to the series?
Well, we have a period of pretty much open dialogue where whoever wants to talk can talk. And we have found that Some people are quieter than others. They get more out of the group by sitting and listening. Some people have more of a need to talk, but there seems to be enough room for everybody to say what they need to say. At times, we will break the group up into smaller groups of two or three in order to afford a little bit more intimate and close communication. So it's kind of a combination, and then there's a teaching component that Dove can talk about in terms of introducing the virtues. And then in this next session, the 4-week session, we're going to have guests come in towards the end of each session and talk a little bit more specifically about concrete resources for mental health in Juneau. We'll have the director of the JAMI program. We'll have Katie Chapman, who's the executive director of NAMI, and a couple of other people come in as sort of an added component this time around.
So it sounds like no one needs fear that the religious component is going to overwhelm them or anything like that.
No, I mean, it's, I'm not going to circumcise anybody. My role really is to actually get in touch with people with traditions in their similar traditions in their from their home traditions, because I think virtues traditions are in Christian Buddhist teachings, and they all really try to attempt to do the same thing. I just know more about my own tradition, and I generalize or universalize whatever is relevant. But I try. There's always I'm a rabbi. I can't help that. So I a little bit of Jewish insight comes through. But we found our main goal is also to build community. People, isolation is such a feature of this this type of problem. People are ashamed, embarrassed. They're angry. They feel alone. They don't know how to handle it. Things are so unpredictable. This really provides a wider base of people to connect with, and we saw a lot of, we could just sit quietly and people would talk, about what's going on with their child or their sibling, and really make those connections is really, we feel is the best thing we can do, and guide people to greater insight and resources.
Could you, maybe this is an unfair question, could you describe the person that you think should attend these sessions?
I think anybody would benefit from attending the session. I don't think any of us are exempt from being touched by someone with mental illness or psychological difficulties. The group this last time turned out to be mainly parents of young adults. We had a couple of people who were there because they had adult siblings. But if you have a spouse, or even a friend, a close friend, a distant friend,
parents,
it just really, offers a way to try to understand and, develop compassion, develop, equanimity. And I also think that what we're teaching are kind of universal truths in a way, and they help people deal with any kind of difficult circumstances. So even if somebody dealing with a family member, perhaps with legal issues or physical illness, there's no reason this would not be helpful for them.
So the sessions will be on Thursday evenings from 7 to about 8:30, 8:15, 8:30. They start on July 12th. It's 4 weeks. It runs through August 2nd. And it's at Sukkot Shalom, which is at 211 Cordova Street in Douglas. There's no charge for this.
There's no charge. We would like to have people register through NAMI, which they can find through the NAMI Juno website.
Right.
Or to call me at Bartlett Hospital, just so we have an idea of who's coming.
Just call the Bartlett main number and ask.
And they'll find me.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Pat.
Thanks for offering this to the community.
You're very welcome. Thanks.
Knows where to.
21 and a half minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next guest is coming to us by way of Sitka. Hello, Ashi Elaine.
Hello, how are you?
I am good. You're here to talk to us about the Home Skillet Music Festival, but first I have to ask you, what's your weather like down there?
It's a little rainy today.
Yeah, forecast the same for us. We're looking at cloudy and a chance of rain coming up here. But luckily, the little glacier tip over that we had earlier this morning, the flood advisory that closed some trails on the back loop has been canceled. So evidently the water's peaked and it's on its way back down. We're real glad of that.
Yeah, I bet so.
Yeah, so you're going to have a flood of music in Sitka on the 13th and 14th of July, I think, huh?
We sure are. Yeah, this next Friday, it all kicks off, so a week from today, and we're really excited about everybody who's going to be participating.
Ashia, Home Skillet is a record label, but you're really kind of like a digital music source, right?
We have the record label Home Skillet Records, and that's separate from our festival. The record label, we actually do make hard copies of CDs. It's just more accessible these days for people to get digital copies through our website.
So a lot of the acts that are going to be on in the festival, though, I think are recording with Home Skillet, is that right?
A lot of them are, or they're doing maybe not whole CDs, but at least working with some of our home artists on different projects. And so that's kind of one of the factors of how we get people, pick people for the festival, join everyone up.
So how would you describe the music people are going to hear at the festival?
Well, we've got a wide, wide range. We're going to have some singer-songwriters. We've got indie folk-style music, some hip-hop, and just it's kind of all over the place, really. We've got a wide range of ages as far as the musicians. Our youngest performer this year is 13-year-old Zachary Wright. We're pretty excited about him taking the stage on Friday, I believe. And we go all the way up into some older gentlemen who are just phenomenal Delta blues players.
Ooh, so it goes all the way to blues.
Oh, yeah. We try to include everybody's passions, and Home Skillet's a pretty broad family with broad musical tastes, so it works out well.
How long has the festival been running?
This is our 7th year. My 6th year being a part of it. It originated from the record label, which my brother George Huff and our friend and extended family, Nicholas Glannon, had started the record label and then decided that, well, we should share all this musical goodness and started up the festival. And it went from something that was kind of small and thrown together to this pretty organized, planned event that brings in all these musicians from all over the state, from the Northwest Coast. It's pretty exciting.
Is there a charge for attending?
Yeah, we've got a $10 ticket price. That's per day. We're doing the shows Friday and Saturday from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m., and kids 10 and under are free.
Ah, and where does this take place in Sitka?
This is out at the golf course on the driving range. They're very generous to donate the space to us. Home Skillet is a nonprofit, and so it's nice to sense that the community supports. And we've got the whole driving range, so everybody can run around or dance or do whatever. And we're going to have face painting, food vendors, beer gardens, hula hoops and beach balls and all the good stuff.
Good. So we have no indication yet of what the weather's going to be like next weekend, but folks probably should come ready to be in the rain since it's outdoors, right?
Well, it never hurts to bring your extra tufts when you go in Southeast.
Yeah, I hear that.
We had the concerts out at the golf course a few years ago, and it actually did rain quite a bit, and we still had a great time, but it was kind of funny to see folks in their raincoats and boots. And this past year, last summer, we held it there again, and the sun came out, so folks were on blankets on the lawn, and you know, shorts and flip-flops, and that was fantastic as well. So we'll be ready for whatever happens.
Well, it's sure been doing that a lot this summer, so there's a good chance that you could wind up with one of those shorts weekends.
I didn't even realize we were in summer, to be quite frank. So it would be great if it happened next weekend.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice? So Medicine for the People is one of the headline groups.
They are. That's a group that we brought up about two or three years ago. I'm sorry, I can't remember exactly. It kind of all starts to blur. And they're out of Portland and also Hawaii. And they just bring this great energy, super danceable music, a lot of drums and guitar and singing. And so they're our headline act, I believe, Friday night.
And then there's a group. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just probably going to say what you were. On Saturday, our headline act is Don't Talk to the Cops. And that's a trio from Seattle. And they have kind of a mix of punk and hip-hop. And it's, again, very danceable, really fun, younger group. And so we're pretty excited about them as well.
So then there's four others that are listed on the website as headline acts. You got Kingdom Crumbs, Fresh Espresso, yes. Metal Chocolates, and Iskadaf.
Yes, those projects are all kind of little, they're newer projects that have stemmed out of groups that we've had in the past. And so we had Mad Rad come up from Seattle a couple times. And so two of those projects are side projects from that group, individuals in that group. And so it's really nice to reconnect with old friends and get a new experience, you know, from their music.
When we finish talking, we're going to hear a little Fresh Espresso here. So
awesome.
I've got them sitting up on one of the turntables even as we speak. So
that's okay. Fantastic.
Tell me about Metal Chocolates. What kind of music do they play?
That is actually one that I'm a little less familiar with. It's a hip-hop, it should be extremely fun, high energy. We really seek out folks who are going to give a good show because, you know, we're under this huge tent, the stage is low, the audience is really close up to it, and so we try to find folks who are going to have a good interaction with the crowd, and I know that all of these groups are going to be able to provide that.
Now, the first artist you started recording on the label, I think, was a woman named Silver Jackson.
Yep. Jackson is also Nicholas Galanin, and he is the co-director with me of Homeschool Fest.
Oh, okay. Okay. So,
and he will be performing on, I want to say, Friday. I'm sorry, I don't have the schedule in front of me.
Yeah, I don't have the schedule. And then you have a performer with a Japanese name, Aisha Fukushima?
Yes, that's actually a young lady who is coming up. She's from San Francisco right now. She has a great website. It's raptivism.org, I believe. And she's coming up to Sitka to perform at Homeschoolit and also give a TEDx talk, which is happening here, I think, on the 22nd.
I'm sorry, what was the word? A TED?
It's a TEDx talk. There's TED Talks online.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay.
And so TEDx is a way that smaller cities can host the same kind of event.
Mm-hmm.
And so she'll be here doing that as well.
So how long do any of these bands get out of the 2 days of performance? How long is the set, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Usually the sets are about, it kind of depends. We end up doing like local acts end up with about 20 minutes, and then our main headline act each evening gets a full hour, and sometimes it runs over a little bit. Most of the since we have kind of six headline acts this year, everybody's getting somewhere between 30 minutes and an hour, so you get a good taste of them. And then some of the different venues in town are hosting after parties, so then those acts will also be performing there.
If somebody's coming down to Sitka, are there adequate hotel rooms to support this little venture?
I would guess so. We seem to have a lot of hotels here, but I don't know. I never booked those.
might be worth early checking if you're thinking about
it. Might be. But, you know, since you and I decided that the sun is going to be out, I'm sure people could just camp.
So is there space out there on the driving range where people could set up a tent?
We don't actually encourage camping out there. Okay. But there's one of the national parks held at Point Rack is pretty much across the street, and so that's probably a better spot with facilities.
So Wavy Gravy is not going to stand up on the stage and have breakfast for 2,000 people, right?
No, that's not happening.
Okay. Well, I think I just dated myself beyond repair when I said that.
But I understood, so it's okay.
Okay. So let's do this timing one more time here. It's July 13th and 14th in Sitka on the driving range at the, what golf course?
Sea Mountain Golf Course.
Sea Mountain Golf Course. And mm-hmm. The price is $10 a night. And basically the acts start what time?
5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
We're going to go until 10 p.m. and hopefully keep it close. And we also do have a dollar shuttle ride provided by Sitka Tours to and from downtown. So if folks come over and aren't with car, then we're going to have that all organized as well.
Grab a cab to the hotel and then use the shuttle to get out to the music.
Exactly.
Okay, great.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 6th of July, 2012. It was on this date, 1812, Ludwig von Beethoven wrote a passionate letter to an unknown woman who's come to be known as the immortal beloved. He began, "My angel, my all, my very self, my heart is full of so many things to say to you. There are moments when I feel that speech amounts to nothing at all." For 200 years, scholars have been talking about the identity of the immortal beloved, whether it was Bettina or Josephine or Antonie. Josephine was a woman Beethoven was very much in love with at one time. Antonie was unhappily married. She met Beethoven in Vienna, where she became ill, and he played piano for her while she lay sick in bed. He wrote the letters shortly before she moved away, and he never saw her again. It was on this date, 1957, Paul McCartney met John Lennon for the first time at the Walton Village Fete in Liverpool. John Lennon was almost 17, Paul McCartney 15. Lennon had a band called the Quarrymen. Though he had trouble remembering lyrics and he didn't know proper guitar chords, he'd learned how to play on a banjo. The band was playing at St. Peter's Church, and Paul told them that he could tune and play a guitar, which impressed the Quarrymen, and Paul then performed 20 Flight Rock by Eddie Cochran and got all the lyrics right. The first official convention of the Republican Party was held on this date, 1854, in Jackson, Michigan. Nearly 10,000 people turned out in protest of the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which had provided for the expansion of slavery into the new Western territories. The Republicans settled on a slate of candidates for the upcoming congressional elections, did well in that election, winning almost 50 seats, and soon had a majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. And it was on this date in 1892, striking steelworkers clashed with Pinkerton security agents in Homestead, Pennsylvania, the Homestead Strike, which resulted in 12 deaths. The steel mill's manager, Henry Clay Frick, had locked workers out of the plant after he cut wages and told the union he would no longer negotiate with them. The strike did not end until the following November, when the striking workers ran out of money and they had to return to work. Here's a poem for today by Gary Young, "As If the Sky and High Plateaus." As if the sky and the high plateaus were not enough, here is a canyon colored like a child's box of crayons. There are strata of purple, scarlet, yellow, and beige. Small buttes that look like wedding cakes rise up out of the gorge, each layer distinct and otherworldly. There is a shade of green in the small hills surrounding these outcrops I have not seen anywhere else. There are traces of sage, olive, turquoise, the sea, but also sulfur, graphite, and blood. A huge portion of the mountain has fallen away from the side of a cliff, creating a natural amphitheater. Echoes are amplified and return resonant and strong. I sit and listen to the split-tailed swifts that nest in the cliff. They whistle, and the echo makes them seem larger and stronger and nearer than they really are. Upon the Garryung, as if the sky and high plateaus. From Even So, New and Selected Poems, published by White Pine Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, produced by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Before 4:22, we have an updated weather forecast. Of course, the flood advisory that was out earlier this morning has been canceled quite some time ago. Evidently, the water peaked out on the back loop and is now receding. Tonight, the weather forecast calls for cloudy, chance of rain, lows around 49, a little cooler than they'd originally forecast. Southwest winds, 5 miles per hour, those will shift around to the southeast in the late evening and overnight. And then rain is likely on Saturday because of the shift in the winds and a front moving in probably. Highs around 56, southeast winds 10 miles per hour. Saturday night, mostly cloudy, chance of showers, low around 45. Sunday, mostly cloudy, chance of showers. Sunday night, mostly cloudy, slight chance of showers. Notice it's getting a little bit, okay. Monday and Monday night, chance of rain. Tuesday through Wednesday, chance of rain. And then Wednesday and Thursday, they're saying, they aren't saying the word rain in the forecast. So it's conceivable that we could, by midweek next week, we could all be dancing in sunshine, huh? Well, maybe dancing in partly cloudiness, I suppose. My next guest is Steve Hendrickson, and Steve is going to lead a walkthrough of two World War II-related exhibits at the State Museum on First Friday this afternoon.
That's right.
So why do we have exhibits of World War II in the State of Alaska Museum?
That's a good question. I think that many people have never, they don't really connect the two very readily. They've heard of places like Pearl Harbor and Iwo Jima, but they wouldn't put places like Dutch Harbor and Attu Island in the same category. But actually, they should be in the same category because of the activities that took place in Alaska 70 years ago with the Japanese raid on Dutch Harbor as part of the Battle of Midway campaign, and then subsequently the occupation of Attu and Kiska Islands by the Japanese Imperial Army, and the response to that by the Allies really has a great deal to do with what Alaska is today. The amount of development that took place at the time, the Alaska Highway, docks and airports and roads, buildings, these are all, many of them are still in use today, greatly improved, but still what set it all off was the response to the Japanese activities here. And then once the Japanese left Alaska, Alaska became a base of operations for bombardments on the Japanese home islands, which brought a quicker end to the war. So We're trying to cover this topic and do it in a way that doesn't glorify the war, but really looks at the war for what it is, a major historical event, but also a turning point in many ways for cultures and societies in Alaska. We look at the positive outcomes of that, but also some of the negatives, such as the imprisonment of U.S. citizens that were forced to leave their homes, and in the case of the Aleutian Islanders, were sent to internment camps in southeast Alaska. In the case of Japanese people of Japanese ancestry, they were shipped south to internment camps generally in the the Western United States. But while they were gone, their property was destroyed and taken. And in the case of Alaska Natives, the ownership of land in a lot of the communities like Sitka, Ketchikan, Juneau, it changed hands during the war because Natives were forced to give up waterfront property for military use, and after the war it wasn't returned to them. So really it caused some major upheavals in Alaska, but stepping back from that, Alaska was very important in the victory of the Allies in the Pacific Theater.
Steve, how does the museum, how do the two museum exhibits illustrate this story?
The exhibits, the primary exhibit is called When Over There Was Here, and that's a reference to a popular song from World War II days. Actually, I think it came about in World War I, and then it was rehashed during World War II, and that became something of an age test among the staff to see who gets it. Some of the younger staff members had never heard of the song Over There, so they didn't quite get the connection. But that's the main exhibit that covers the entirety of the war. And then the other exhibit is a photographic exhibit of what the battlefield at Kiska looks like today, all the battlefield artifacts where they pretty much remain in the places they were left by the Japanese. And so that you get to see what the battlefield actually looks like today. But between the two exhibits, the entire episode is well covered from the very beginning when there was, after Pearl Harbor, there was a lot of activity to prepare for war in Alaska. There were blackouts in the communities, and people were on the lookout for Japanese planes flying over, and they started having these balloon bombs coming over sent from the island of Japan to start fires and forest fires. They had incendiary bombs underneath them. They were unmanned. They were just caught on the airstream, and they landed all over Alaska and the western part of the U.S., and we actually have a part of a balloon envelope that landed at Windham Bay just south of Juneau from one of these. Incidentally, my first experience with the balloon bombs was when I was a kid in my grandfather's attic down in Portland. I noticed he had all these coffee cans filled with sand. And I asked him what that was, and he says, well, during World War II, they told us we needed to have sand in the attic in case the incendiary bomb started a fire on the roof. The only way to put those out was with sand. If you threw water on them, it would just spread the fire. Mm-hmm. So after the war, he just left them up there. So, so we start with that, the story of what was going on the home front. We talk about the raid on Dutch Harbor and the occupation of the Aleutian Islands, and then subsequently it took a year for the Allies to build up to retake those islands. Attu had to be taken by force. Kiska was the Japanese evacuated it before the Americans and Canadians got there, so they didn't have an actual battle there to retake Kiska, but the Battle of Attu was the bloodiest fighting in all of the Pacific during the war as far as the casualty rate. And it was so high in part because of the weather caused over 1,000 casualties just due to the horrible weather, and especially on the soldiers were poorly equipped. There's all these stories about soldiers preparing for battle in the South Pacific, and their ship got diverted to Alaska, and they had all this tropical weight clothing, and so the weather was definitely a character in this story. But it's all about stories, and we cover the side of the Americans, but also the side of the Japanese, because they were human beings going through many of the same hardships that the Americans did. And, we look at the cultural aspect of the Japanese army and how their code, military code, fit in with the samurai way of life, and that led to things like the last day of the Battle of Attu. The surviving 1,000 or so Japanese soldiers amassed and made a suicide charge against the Americans, and out of several thousand Japanese soldiers, there was only about a dozen survivors, and they all died either in that suicide charge or in the fighting before that.
Amazing. You said the Canadians took part in this?
Yes, the Canadians and also other, like the Russians, also were in Alaska, primarily to pick up aircraft that we were sending over to Russia through the Lend-Lease program. Mm-hmm. There was a string of air bases along that they ferried these aircraft up to Ladd Field in Fairbanks and Nome, and they were picked up there by Russian pilots and flown over to Siberia and then to the front in Europe. So we played a role in the European theater of the war in that way as well.
A lot of people don't realize that was one of the reasons that the Alcan Highway zigzagged in places, is because that way a strafing run would not take out all of the gasoline tankers that were driving up to deliver gas to the intermediate airstrips. For, I think it was B-19s. I can't remember what we gave the Russians.
Yeah, there was
a short-range tactical bomber that could only fly about 200 miles at a whack, so they had to put the fueling dumps about 200 miles apart.
And they put the road through an unbelievably short amount of time, about a year, to make the Pioneer Road. And because of that, they did have to, rather than going, through, they had to take the easiest route. Sometimes they had to go around big boulders and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have time to move it. And over the years, that's gradually been straightened, and now it's all paved in a fairly modern road. But
Steve, if people want to follow up on this, are there books? And does the museum maintain any kind of list, a bibliography or anything like that?
Well, I'm sure
there must be several.
Oh yeah, there's a tremendous amount of information online now about all of these topics. But as far as books go, there are some excellent sources that the Alaska State Library has, and all the public libraries would have the basic classic books on the World War II in Alaska. And one recently came out that I think it was last year. It's called Last Letters from Attu. It was a book about Mr. and Mrs. Foster Jones, who were teachers on Attu when the Japanese invaded. And Mr. Jones was executed by the Japanese, and Mrs. Jones was captured and spent the war in a POW camp in Japan, along with about 20 or so Aleuts from Attu, many of whom got sick and died during their captivity. But that's a very recent book on the subject.
Steve, it seems to me we've got a really excellent program here. So you're going to lead a walkthrough of the exhibit, kind of explain things as you go, and your walkthrough starts at 4:30 this afternoon.
Actually, it's the first Friday program. We're open late tonight, so the museum is open starting at 4:30. My program is actually 6 to 7.
Oh, 6 to 7, okay,
yeah.
For your walkthrough.
But you're welcome to come earlier and check out some of the other exhibits. We also have the Dan DeRue art exhibit, too,
yes.
That's up on the second floor.
And if anyone hasn't seen it, it's an amazing exhibit of a very humorous take on Alaskan history. Thank you very much. I kind of gave this away earlier about the fact that we got a little World War II music, but here's Bing Crosby.
But here's Bing Crosby with a tune they're singing all over the United Nations from Brooklyn to Bombay.
There's a troop ship just leaving Bombay, bound for the blimey shore, heavily laden with time-expired men, bound for the land they adore. There's many a bloke who has just missed the boat, there's many a lad signing on, but there'll be no promotion this side of the ocean, so cheer up, my lads, bless them all, bless them all, bless them all. the long and the short and the tall. Bless all the sergeants, the top kickers too. Bless all the corporals, and above all, bless you, for we're saying goodbye to them all. As up the gangway we crawl, no ice cream and cookies for stout-hearted rookies, so cheer up, me lads, bless them all.
They say that in camp you can have a swell time, we've heard it all before.
5 in the morning and you're kicked out of bed to scrub up the barracks room floor.
A private has really no privacy now, we're all behind the 8-ball. No ice cream and cookies for flat-footed rookies, so cheer up, my lads, bless them all.
Bless them all,
bless them all, bless them all, bless them all.
The boys the call. Just to remind them they're on the right track, stand right behind them and back that attack. That's the least you can do after all. For those who must carry the ball, so keep buying war bonds, buy more and more war bonds. That's how to say bless them all.
Privates and generals, big and small, that's how to say bless them all.
Wander over to the museum tonight at 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock as part of your first Friday walk, and get a walk through, a lead through of the two World War II based exhibits. The museum has, of course, its usual program of free admission for First Friday, and the rest of the First Friday happenings around town, take those in as well.
Easiest way to enroll at the University of Alaska Southeast? Come to an enrollment day. Meet with UAS advisors, complete applications, and register for fall classes. Wednesday, July 11th, noon to 6 p.m. at the UAS Auk Lake campus. Need more info? Call the Student Resource Center at 796-6000 or go to uas.alaska.edu/enrollment day.
Now, earlier I had a guest on the program who I was hoping to play a piece that was going to be part of the music at the Home Skillet Music Festival, which is coming up Saturday, July 13th and 14th. We were talking with Ashia Lane. The Home Skillet Festival is down in Sitka. It's going to take place at the Sea Mountain Golf Course. Music starts at 5 o'clock each day. There's a $10 per day fee. And if you want to go down, Sitka has quite a number of hotels, but it'd probably be wise to get pre-reserved. Here's some music that will be heard at the festival.
Official, we get our money right. We pack a diamond pistol. This is real life. It's so official. diamond pistols at my waist. I know you see it gleaming. The fire's burning in my eyes. I know you see them steaming. I know you see me dreaming about the diamond life. Plus my beats are hella epic and the rhyme is tight. Like Kraft macaroni fresh out the box with 101 ways to get a breath out of top. And my hustle is so out of control that I got apostles that's reading my gospel. And through P, all beats are possible. I'm eating filet mignon, y'all stuck on impossible. Win like tic-tac-toe, flip that for show. Kick snaps and flow, fresh espresso. And it's so official, yeah, and it's so damn simple. And this is real life, it's so official. We get our money right, we pack it down.
Music by Fresh Espresso that'll be heard at the Sitka Music Festival coming up, the Home Skillet Festival on July 13th and 14th down in Sitka. So think about that, an eclectic mix of music they bill it as, and we'll see how eclectic that can get. A couple of minutes now be up until all things considered. The weather forecast is slightly changed. Cloudy, chance of rain tonight. Lows around 49. Southeast winds 5 miles per hour. Those will shift to southeast the late evening and overnight. And then Saturday, rain is likely. Highs around 56. Southeast winds 10 miles per hour. Saturday night, mostly cloudy. Chance of showers. Lows around 49. Southeast winds, northeast winds 5 miles per hour. You're in tune with KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and in Douglas, and then we also broadcast on a set of translators throughout the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, you can tune to K276AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we're heard on K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTO on K210AS at 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTO on GCI Cable Juneau. We're on digital channel 871. Our sister stations, KRNN and KXLL, can be found on channels 872 and 873. And we're continuously streaming on www.ktoo.org.